one more time.
Exactly.
Well, welcome to another episode of Savoring Sound. We got the ever talented Robert Robinson with us. Thanks for coming out with us and chatting with me today, my man.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. Maybe we'll just dive right into it, man.
Like, sure.
I just kind of want to get to know just like what your base is. Like what are the roots that grew you into this amazing singer and vocalist?
I started singing. That was my mom's fault.
Yeah.
My mother was a singer, church singer, of course, and when she started having kids and we got like, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, she lined us up and said, you guys are going to sing. And she taught us, you know, simple children's songs, you know, the Yes, Jesus Loves Me and all of that kind of stuff. And we sang sometimes because my dad was a preacher and he would, as an evangelist, he would go to different places.
Okay.
And he'd kind of take us along with him and we would sing a song or something before. He would, you know, bring the message.
Right. Okay.
And so that's kind of where we started.
Excellent.
You know, my mom lining us up and telling us, you know, these are the words, this is how it goes. And if she wanted us to sing it until she felt it.
Yeah.
She said, you're too young to feel anything. So
yeah, okay. So
She wanted us to sing it until she felt it. Mm-hmm. So that's how it all started.
How many of you were there?
Total of four.
Four kids. Okay. And everyone was, or is a singer?
Everybody is a singer. Okay. Yeah, everybody is a singer. My brother, God rest his soul, was a singer and a drummer.
Yeah.
And I sang, and my two sisters sang as well.
Yeah.
Or sang.
Yeah.
One of them doesn't sing unless you rope her into it.
It's not her favorite thing.
Not at all. She doesn't mind singing with me, but she doesn't want to do a bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. But as long as I'm in it, she'll help. So.
So she's got pipes, but she just doesn't like
to
let him
out. She doesn't want the world to know, right?
Mm-hmm. Were you guys traveling? Like, well, you said you were traveling, so.
Well, when my dad got to go places in his ministry, then we would go with him. But it wasn't anything like, you know. I mean, we probably didn't go any further than Waterloo, Iowa, or Des Moines, or something like that, because my dad had family down in that area, so we went down there, and we went to a few places here in Minnesota, but that's kind of like the base. We did most of our stuff here in Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Because I grew up watching you perform at Park Avenue Methodist, and you were a big part of that music community at that church.
At the church, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think as we were talking about a little bit earlier, I kind of got started there because of Tom Fitch and Henry Weems and that whole group of people. And they brought me in to work with Sam Davis, who did the Soul Lib Choir before me.
Oh, okay.
And when Sam was not able to do it, he told them about me. Mm-hmm. And then they brought me in. I think they kind of already knew about me a little bit, but didn't maybe know about what I had done with choirs. And so I did. Yeah. I came in and I started working with the choir, the Soul Lib Choir, for a few years. And that may have been when you saw me flailing my arms trying to get people to sing.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I had, by the time I did that, I had been directing my father's church choir because my dad had gotten a church. I think I was like 13.
Okay.
And so by the time I was 14, we had a few people in the church and they wanted to sing.
You were
so
young.
Yeah, I was very young. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing choir rehearsals, teaching people, and I didn't really know a whole lot myself, but what I did know, I tried to share it with them. I taught them parts, you know, the parts. Yeah. At that time, I could only hear two-part harmony.
Okay.
And when I was like 14, I could only hear soprano and alto.
Yeah.
But I decided, you know, don't be ashamed of what you got, you know, give people what you have. So we did a full concert in two-part harmony.
In two-part, okay.
And people actually came and listened to it. Okay. And they said they liked it. So, but it didn't stop me from trying to learn more about you know, more about the harmonic structure and how to bring tenors and bass. And to this day, I still struggle with bass lines, but I do. Since I am a tenor, I should probably be able to do a tenor line pretty well. Yeah, so I can do soprano alto tenor pretty well, and then if somebody helps me, I can actually create a bass line too. Yeah. So, but
I'd say that's my kryptonite too. Oh, creating it.
Low
end, man.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I absolutely love it. I was very frustrated in the beginning because my ear had not been developed enough to hear more than just two-part harmony. But I'm grateful for things kicking in and me being able to do more. So,
how'd that come about? How'd you like strengthen your ear tuning?
I can't tell a lie. I cheated. I listened to a lot of music.
Yeah. Not cheating.
I listen to a lot of different music. Mm-hmm. Please don't tell my mom.
Yeah.
And dad, yeah. But I listen to a lot of music. I listen to how they, you know, layer the voicing. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, so that would be soprano. I think what the problem is maybe I'm putting the sopranos and the altos together and I'm not doing the altos right. I should move the tenors here and put the altos. So it took a long time. Mm-hmm. I went to a lot of concerts and heard a lot of different people sing.
Absolutely.
Locally. Yeah. And I also did a little traveling after I got older. Went to conventions that were specifically based in music to go and to learn. And that's kind of how it all started kicking in. I would go, and I didn't have any kind of degree or anything. So I would just hear things. And I could, my memory was really good in those days. Yeah. So I took whatever I heard home, and I would listen to the tape, and I would press the piano key, and I'm like, okay, sopranos are here, altos are here, tenors are here. Yeah. And then I could sing all the parts based on what I just played. And so that was a gift, because I know everybody couldn't do it or can't do it, but that's kind of how I started building, developing my dad's choir into three-part harmony. By the time we did a concert, of course, a couple of years later, my ear had been a little bit more developed, and we were doing three parts, and you know, it was a blessing.
That's excellent. You know, everyone has their own process
That's with right.
that type of stuff. You know?
Yeah.
So, like, moving out of like the church world, like, how did that go? Like, what made you step outside of just the pure like church choir type stuff?
Well, I started getting offers from people to do work that I never, you know, first of all, I started getting calls to do weddings and funerals. And funerals kind of was not a big deal because usually people wanted Christian music at a funeral. But weddings, they weren't always interested in Amazing Grace, at a wedding or something like that. So that kind of challenged me to learn a little bit of Luther Vandross and Stevie Wonder, you know, different artists. And I didn't have a huge repertoire, but that's kind of what started me to learning more. And then, let's see, what did I do after that? I got called by Theater de la Jeune Lune to audition for the Nightingale.
That's what it was,
And I was about 30 by that time when that happened. And I said, audition for the Nightingale. And so I didn't really know what it all entailed. I'd never done any theater work before. Okay. So I went to the audition. Of course, I sang a gospel song because that's pretty much all I knew.
Yeah.
And I did the gospel song, and the two people were sitting there, and they were like, okay. And then they said, well, can you do this? And they give me something to look at, and I did what I could with it.
Yeah.
And then
they
said, well, we'll give you a call in about a week and let you know what's going on.
For sure.
Okay, it's fine. So I went on back to my job and kept doing my work and everything. And about a week later, I got a call saying that I had got the part. And then I learned that basically the Nightingale was a bird, and in my case, a really big bird.
Yeah.
And so I had to learn music that just, it was like not it wasn't gospel, it wasn't secular, it was just music.
Yeah.
And I had a good time doing it. You know, I learned a lot about what I would do, what I will do, and what I don't want to do in the future, I put it that way. So,
absolutely.
But I had a good time with it. And since then, I've done a few other plays and
musicals.
Stuff. Yeah, musical stuff like that. So, yeah, but that's kind of how that started. And then people came to that show. It had like, the normal run was done. And then because it was in such high demand, we had to extend the show for a few more weeks, which basically meant things were going well with it. So
excellent.
Yeah. But that's kind of where that all started. And then after that, people started hiring me to do all kinds of things that I had never done before. But I took the challenge.
Yeah. Seems like you rocked it, though.
I feel very blessed that I was able to do all of those things. And after that, I had started, well, right around the same time, I had started a gospel choir.
Yeah.
Twin Cities Community Gospel Choir. That was, I started that in May of 1990.
Okay.
And worked with them for almost 20 years, but in the very beginning, we did a lot of stuff together, and the choir grew, was like 125 voices.
Oh, wow.
It was a huge blessing. I learned a lot about people, about cultures. It was an amazing time in my life. It was a difficult time in my life because I continued to always find myself learning.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you just want to say, well, do I spend my whole life learning? And the answer is yes.
Absolutely. You know,
I wanted the learning process to kind of stop somewhere, but thank God it really did.
Yes,
it didn't. It didn't. But I learned a lot from them. And there was some choir members in the choir, and they were getting married, and they asked me to sing for their wedding. And I told them I would do it. And so it was at a big church out in Eden Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, and I had to pick up my musician because they didn't have a ride.
Yeah.
So I went, picked him up. We went all the way out there. We didn't get a chance to rehearse, but I told him when we got there, I said, well, I'm going to sing Amazing Grace because that's what the couple wanted.
Yeah.
And they told me, I don't know Amazing Grace. And I'm like, how could you not know Amazing Grace? I just wanted to shake them. Like, what do you mean you don't know Amazing Grace? But nonetheless, I had to get up and sing the song a cappella.
Yeah.
And in between the verses and stuff like that, I just automatically just started doing moans and oohs and ahs, kind of like as my musical fill-in.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was, Lori Lyne was in the audience.
Okay.
I didn't even know who Lori Lyne was.
At the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
So I did what I was supposed to do. I left. He decided he would get a ride with somebody else, which was fine with me. I was upset with him anyway for not knowing Amazing Grace. And then Lori's husband stopped me and said, my wife is a music producer and she would like for you to do something with her.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool.
Yeah.
And I took the card, went on, didn't hear from them for a while. And then all of a sudden I get this call from a lady, she said, my name's Lori Lyne, and I'm getting ready to record an album, and I'd like you to come to the studio.
Okay.
Would you record?
Yeah,
and I'm okay, sure, I will. So I went to the studio, and I listened to the song. She sent it to me in advance. I listened to the song, and then when I got there, I was ready to do the song. It was like, O Come Emmanuel. It was a Christmas album. Mm-hmm. I can do this.
Yeah.
So I'm getting ready to go in, and I start singing the actual lyrics, and then she stops, and she's, and I'm like, oh, shoot, I done messed up again.
Yeah.
And she's like, no. She said, I don't want you to sing the words. Okay, well, what do you want me to do?
Okay.
She said, remember at the wedding when you were doing all the moans and the oohs and all of that improvisational stuff?
Yeah.
That's all I want you to do.
All right.
And I'll play. The band will, you know, be playing in the background.
Yeah.
And you just do these embellishments.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got started with Lori Lyon.
Was that your first studio experience?
No, it was my first. It was for my first real one. Yeah. I had done a few things in the studio, but yeah, not a lot. It was in. It was at NPR Studio C or B or whatever they called it.
Okay.
So it was like pretty
high tech.
Pretty high tech. Mm-hmm. You know, they did a lot of their stuff for NPR there. Mm-hmm. So it was a nice place. Really nice setup. Yeah. So that's why I say my first real one. I'd been to some studios, but yeah, they was more like, you know, did it work? Plug it in over here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kind of like what we're doing right here.
You know, but I didn't want to go there. I let you bring that up. I'm not going to bring it up.
Hey, I come to you.
But this
you
know? Is still high tech compared to, you know, something I've had to deal with.
Absolutely. So you've created like kind of your own sound, like the gospel soul sound. You know, how would you actually describe what you've created or what drives, you know, what drives that vision?
You know, one of the things that I've seen here in Minneapolis is, even though I grew up in the black church and I did that for a long time,
yeah,
one of the things that I've learned is that you cannot always give people that kind of churchy sound, like mm-hmm, all the time.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to pull it back and build it and take them on an emotional trip.
Yeah.
And by the time you get to the end, they're ready for some gospel. Mm-hmm. But in the very beginning, you got to draw them in with something else. And
yeah,
God bless me with enough layers and textures of my voice that yeah, I can do that. Mm-hmm. So I might start out sounding more like a lullaby, and then I kind of build it into something a little more classical, and by the end they're ready for a nice deep church squall, so yeah, I give that to them, you know. Yeah. And then after that the song is over, and they remember going on this musical ride yeah, with this guy named Robert Robinson, and it was just like they don't have any words for it, but I know it's something bigger than me, but I'm just grateful I was the vehicle that could be used to bring them that experience.
Yeah. And like I know in the past that you've mentioned that your voice is too big for radio and stuff like that.
I've heard that a few times. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. Did that affect you at all when you've heard that? Is that a little?
It was a little painful.
Yeah.
Because I had always hoped that maybe someday that, you know, I would have that experience, and mm-hmm, there are radio stations that still play my music.
Absolutely.
Not in Minnesota very much, but yeah, other places, and so I guess it kind of hurt for a bit, you yeah, know, but I figured God always has a plan, so yeah, that I just decided I'm going to not, you know, dwell on this. I'm going to, like, keep moving forward. There must be something bigger than this that I'm supposed to do, so I'll just keep it moving.
That gave you a little bit of more drive, right?
Yeah,
you know, just to become your own, you know, yeah, producer,
yeah,
a creative director, just kind of yeah, take the reins of
yeah,
of your future with that type of stuff.
And the audience that I was able to build from touring with Lori for the number of years that I did, I think it was close to 15 years yeah, that I toured with her, I learned a lot about developing my sound, my style, how to make things fun, how to make things more serious. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it was a great, great experience.
A lot of, you know, fans and other musicians kind of see you, they kind of look to you for some inspiration and stuff like that, you know? Because you are pretty much like a self-taught artist, you know? Not self-taught, but self-developed, I mm-hmm, guess, if I should say it more like that, mm-hmm, you know? But how do you, like, to keep yourself grounded when you know you're being looked at with, you know, that type of affirmation?
In all honesty, I have been taught ever since I was a kid.
Absolutely.
That whatever gift that comes out of you, whether it's music, poetry, dance, whatever, anything that comes out of you, you have to know that there is a source bigger than you that has given you this gift.
Absolutely.
So always keep yourself humble. Mm-hmm. Never feel like you're better than anybody around you. I don't care what it might look like. The bottom line is that gifts come from above.
Absolutely.
And so if there was something that somebody saw in me, I was just happy because then that meant they saw the gift. They mm-hmm, didn't really get to see me because even though I worked hard to develop it, I had to have something to work with.
Absolutely.
You know, yep, and yep. So that nucleus is what, you know, was just the beginning of where people see me today. It has taken a lot of years of praying and studying, maybe not in the way that other people have studied, but yeah. in the way that I had to do it to be the person and the artist that I am today.
I know you've been quoted, we should embrace every hurting person with your music. How do you feel like you convey that?
I really try to follow what I was explaining earlier about taking whatever music that I'm doing mm-hmm. and trying to do it in a way that personalizes it for the listener
yeah.
so that they can sense that there's something in there for them. It mm-hmm. might not be anything but maybe one line or one sentence,
yeah.
but whatever it is, number one, I want to sing it so passionately that they can't help but to listen, mm-hmm. and I want to be articulate with it so they can't say they didn't understand it.
Yeah.
And third, I want to, if I get to repeat that line, which I do usually in gospel,
yeah.
if I get to repeat that line, I want it to grow and become more powerful and stronger so that they really can go on a journey with me and yeah. still feel like they were a part of it. Sometimes yeah. it can be for a person that doesn't believe God at all.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't believe, they don't believe in, I mean, they could be Jewish and not follow that whole, you know, Father, Son, Holy Ghost type thing that we, that are in the, you know, Pentecostal church
yeah,
believe.
Sure.
But that kind of stuff, I'm really trying to get beyond those barriers and just reach for people and draw them into looking at the fact that regardless of who you might choose,
yeah.
ultimately, we got to live on this earth with each other and we got to do it in peace, because if we don't, we're just going to have chaos.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So if I can give people a message that will bring them to that mm-hmm. I got to learn how to be better, and better starts with myself and then it grows to people in my home. And if that is, once I get that accomplished, then I can do people in my job or my school,
yeah,
in
yeah.
my community. That's what I think ultimately gospel is supposed to help us do. Is, yes, it is a message of good news, but it's good news for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how you want to pull it in, it's good news because it's giving you the whole idea and concept that you can be better as a person
mm-hmm.
and that you can treat others with that same kind of passion and love
yeah.
and it'll be okay. I don't care. We may not agree on everything,
mm-hmm.
but we got one thing. We can love each other. We,
yeah.
you know, we can get along with each other,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
So that's, I know that probably is far beyond what you asked me, but that's
this is awesome, man.
Okay.
I really dig it. You kind of answered that a little bit, but like, I just always like to ask, for people just kind of maybe starting out in this, because you've, you know, influenced music, you've influenced communities. Mm-hmm. Like, for people like that, that are trying to, you know, possibly follow a bit in your footsteps, would you have any words of like wisdom or advice?
One of the things that I always tell people, there is a concept about being yourself.
Yeah.
And I agree that you do have to be yourself. But there's a little parable that in the Bible that talks about that that Jesus was talking to the disciples about being fishers of men.
Mm-hmm.
They had always thought about fishing.
Yeah.
Because that's who they were fishermen.
Yes.
But then when he brought in this whole thing about being fishers of men,
yeah.
they looked at him like, what? How are you going to be a fisher of a person? You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that concept to me means that I have something that I have my own style. I have my own way that I communicate with people.
Mm-hmm.
But the real challenge is learning how to take what you have
okay.
and bring others into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it may not be the simple act of just fishing and pulling them in and say, I got a fish.
Yeah.
You know, but it's being able to grow what you do so that one day when you pull out, you come back with something bigger than just the plain old ordinary fish. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You're going to pull in a person or a concept that's bigger than what people thought they could do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can't always explain it yourself, but you can see it all happening. Mm-hmm. Like I saw this gospel choir happening. I didn't think, there was absolutely no thought in my mind that I would end up being a gospel choir director of if people in the community, those community people not all being Pentecostal people, and that they would definitely not be as multicultural as the choir was. I thought it would just be a lot of black people that want to sing.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But
that's not what you got, huh?
And that's what happens when you try to become fishers of men and not just a fisherman.
Okay. That's excellent, man. So, well, I really appreciate you taking this time to sit down and chat with me, man. It's really good to see you again.
Good to see you too, and thank you for asking me to do this. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
See, it really kind of helps me think about a lot of things I haven't thought about in a long time.
I hope that's a good thing.
It is. It is a good thing. I don't take anything that I've ever done to be so negative. Sometimes they were challenging, but nothing so negative that I can't look back and smile and see that it was God that was orchestrating something bigger than me. So
that's excellent. Do you have any shows coming up or anything planned?
You know, my show right now is to get out of this rehab facility, get home, get stronger, and you know, I have a home church that I work with over at First Covenant in downtown Minneapolis. And I'd love to get back to working there and working with the choir and singing every once a month and just see how my body starts to develop and get stronger. And after that, I'll kind of fish out into the deep.
Go from there. Go from there.
I won't be a shore fisherman. I'll get in the boat and get out there a little deeper.
Excellent. Yes, well, again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to chat with
me. My pleasure, man. Thanks for asking.
Cheers.
Bless you. Yes, indeed.
Hey, thanks for joining me for another episode of Savoring Sound. For more information on upcoming shows, please visit thedakotacooks.com or call the box office at 612-332-5299. Until then, be well.